You're listening to the D6 Podcast. Here's your hosts, Ron Hunter and Jeremy Lee.
We are with Jim and Lynn Jackson. Thank you guys for being with us today.
Oh, it's great to be here.
We're excited.
The Jacksons work with single parents, adoptive parents, parents of teens, parents of kids. Are there any parents that we've left out that you don't work with?
we do our best to meet them all where they're at.
But in particular, the parents of kids with intense behavior challenges, parents in blended families, parents of wealth, and parents... never mind. Not in particular. We're going to keep going. This is great. But they're committed to challenge, encourage, and equip you to be a thoughtful and confident parent. I love that.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for being here.
Yeah.
Today, I want to talk to you about four strengths of every great family because you've come to D6, and that's what you're doing a seminar on. I saw that, and I thought, I want to know what these four strengths are. So if you don't mind, let's start by just rolling through those.
Yeah.
I'm betting that there are ministers listening to this, just so you know, age-graded ministers are listening to this, children's ministers, youth ministers.
Cool.
And so our whole goal here is to help our families be great. So how can we accomplish that? So what's the first one?
Well, Four Strengths of Every Great Family comes out of a book we wrote called How to Grow a Connected Family. And it's really a framework that we teach parents that helps them not only learn some cool, inspiring, helpful, equipping concepts, but then remember them when the heat is on. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's kind of been our goal all along. We've been teaching parenting for well over 20 years. And the first strength that we talk about of every great family is the strength of a strong foundation, a foundation rooted and grounded in identity in Christ, rooted and grounded in a strong sense of individual purpose, a strong sense of insight about me, about what's going on in me, about how what's going on in me affects how I treat other people. And so this strong foundation is really the underlying part of a strong family that parents are responsible to lead the way in before they teach their kids about it. Because if you want to teach your kids spirituality, but you yourself aren't really grounding and growing in God's grace and truth, your kids just read that as hypocrisy. Mm. So getting this foundation, it's never perfect. We're always growing, but growing a strong foundation is strength number one.
All right.
And that really allows us to be authentic with our kids and humble before them because we're receiving God's grace and truth and passing it on. And when that foundation is in place, then we can go and really relate to kids with that second strength, which is just to connect. Not just to say, I love you, kid, but I love you and enjoy you. Mm-hmm. And that's what's so key in relationships with kids is that they feel enjoyed. Just because, like so many of us, we know God loves us, but does he enjoy us? And so we teach parents ways to communicate love, not so that it can be understood, but so their kids can't miss it. Yeah. And they really do feel loved and enjoyed. So many behavior challenges just disappear when kids feel that way. Mm-hmm. So we talk about lots of practical ways to help parents get that message through to their kids.
Yep. So if your watchers, listeners are tracking with us, we've got this foundation at the base, and then we build on the foundation to connection.
Okay.
And then strength number three.
Let's bring it.
Is an environment of coaching. We coach. We take on the attitude of a coach with our kids. Not a coach who waits for kids to make mistakes. That's what we do when we correct our kids, which is the fourth principle, and it's important. But when we coach our kids, we're really about proactive. And D6, honestly, is all about let's be proactive to coach our kids, to train our kids in the way they should go, to bring them up, to help them know their gifts, know that God gave them those gifts for his purpose. To be a blessing in the world, and let's get intentional about that. Let's not wait for misbehavior to try to do our teaching about what's right from wrong and building character, but let's be out ahead of it, because if we're not out ahead of it, somebody is coaching our kids. There's influences all over the place, teachers, media, friends, neighbors, whatever it might be. Our kids are getting coached. The question is, are we aware of the coaching we're doing with our kids and being proactive about that?
And that coach is like, it's setting up specific opportunities for kids to learn, and it's also asking thoughtful questions. Jesus asked 304 questions that were recorded in Scripture, and parents sometimes just think, I'm going to build values and skills by lecturing, telling them what I think. Mm-hmm. But to coach our kids really means asking thoughtful questions to elicit their thinking and thought process. So those values and skills come from within and not just from being
When we tell kids what to do, it doesn't engage their brains the same way. They don't learn the same way. They might learn to respond to our big energy to get them to do what we want them to do, but their brains don't go into a process by which they understand why they're doing it and what their other options might be and what the impact of their behavior might be. And so good coaching really comes alongside a child and helps them to do this, and questions is a key part. So if you're a five-year-old and you're looking at what you're going to do, I might say, instead of saying, no, don't do that, which is default for parents, I might say, well, boy, it looks like you're looking at a couple of different things. What are you thinking about? Which one do you think is best? Why? Well, did you know that there's some things that might happen if you do that that wouldn't happen if you did that? Do you know what those are? And now all of a sudden a five-year-old child, or three even, is their brain is starting to engage. You're like, what? And that's learning. That's important mm-hmm. learning, because they're learning cause, effect, and wisdom rather than just respond to big angry adult.
Yeah, growing wisdom and purpose is really kind of the end goal of this coach principle.
Nice.
And then on top of that, of course, kids are still going to misbehave, and then we need to correct them.
No, honey. If we do this perfectly, they're going to. We don't have to worry about this correction discipline thing.
And so often, parents will come to us, and that's their felt need. What's the consequence to make this behavior stop? And when they focus on punishment, it discourages the child, builds resentment. And so we help parents embrace a focus on reconciliation.
Yeah.
And Galatians 6:1 says, if anyone is caught in a sin, you who are spiritual, restore that person gently.
Gently.
So we just apply that to parenting.
Gently.
It's about
Where's
restoration.
The cameras? Gently, gently.
Yeah.
It's so hard for us as parents to wrap our heads around this idea of gentle discipline.
Mm-hmm.
We think it needs to be firm. We think we need to mean business. We think we need to be the parent. And those things might all be true, but probably not most of the time. A little bit here and there, because we've won the trust of our kids by being gentle most of the time. So when we get serious, they know we really mean business this time.
Yeah. And being the parent, we think, means leading our child in building a value of reconciliation and then teaching them the skills about how to do that, holding them accountable. So, you know, the underlying principle is effective discipline puts responsibility on the child to make right what they've made wrong.
Yeah. So, and really what happened is we wrote this first book, How to Grow a Connected Family. We wrote about these four strengths, these four principles, a strong foundation, connect, coach, correct. I mean, like, that's the four layers, and be thoughtful about those.
Could we not get a C at the bottom?
Can you help us with that? Core, or centered. I know we
learned to
mess
with me right now. We tried.
But here's the thing. We actually talked and laughed about that, because the foundation, really, at the end of the day, is not about what we do with our kids. It's about something that we do. It's between us and God. It's about personal private work. It's about my own devotional life. It's about my own growth and insight about me and what's going on in me. And it is different. And then we grow out of that foundation into relationship with our kids, which is the three C words. Mm. But what happened was, as we wrote that book and published it in 2005.
Okay.
And it's been very popular and well-liked on Amazon. But then people said, you know, that last section isn't very long, the section about correction. Can you tell us more about that? And so that's what led us to write about discipline and really start focusing on and paying attention to the role that discipline has even in the spiritual formation of our kids. So this thing that Lynn just said is really important. It's my goal not to manage behavior when I discipline my kids. It's my goal to shape their belief.
And
when we discipline our kids, maybe as powerfully as at any other time, we're shaping not how they behave, but what they believe about themselves.
Mm-hmm. What they believe about themselves. The subtle underneath the surface messages that parents inadvertently, unintentionally communicate during discipline are often, through body language and tone of voice, are often messages like, you're a problem, you're a pain in the neck, you're disrespectful and disobedient and irresponsible, and you're in control of my emotions. Now, parents don't realize they're communicating those messages, but that's the messages kids are getting that become their inner voice, that become their identity. And from that identity flows lots of more of that same difficult behavior.
Yeah, out of the abundance of our hearts, our mouths speak. Another way that you might think about that is that based on how I identify myself, that's how I behave. And our kids, if we send them lots of you are messages like the ones Lynn's talking about, you're a pain, you're a problem, and so on, then they start to believe that's true about themselves, and then they naturally behave that way. And then we discipline them for their behavior, but what we're not attentive to is that their behavior is flowing out of their identity. And we don't even pay attention to that in our default as parents because we're moving so fast and we want to get this done and we want to be the parent and we want to get this right. And the pace of our culture has compelled us as parents, wrongfully so, we think, to get stuff done quickly and efficiently. Discipline is not a quick and efficient matter. Yeah.
Wow. You guys are amazing here. So you've got another seminar called Siblings, and I've got two boys, so bring this on. I'm ready for you. From bickering to bonding. I think this, we might go viral if you could give us some help with this. Now, how in the world can we accomplish this?
Well, I think that there's two really underlying challenges that parents face that they're not even aware of in the sibling issue. And one is the kids don't value the relationship as much as is really necessary for them to start to work through problems. And they don't value reconciliation. So a parent's primary job really is to help them really learn to value that sibling relationship, enjoy it, so that they want to get back to the joy.
Yeah.
And then to see reconciliation as that's what reconciliation is about. So we can get back to the joy that we were created for in this relationship. Yeah. So we try to make that practical for parents because oftentimes how they engage with sibling conflict makes the relationship more problematic, less appealing, and also makes reconciliation less appealing.
Well,
say
and,
you're sorry! You know, it's like, and, that's not...
And to go back to the framework that we talked about in our first book, I mean, we really talk about sibling relationships in that context with different words. And the framework, when if you think about what parents typically do when their kids fight, what do? We go, hey, you kids, stop that. You need to get along. You say you're sorry. You say you're sorry. Hey, that's not okay. No. You go to your room and don't come out until you can say you're sorry.
You don't
treat your sister like that. That is not okay. And so what are kids learning right now? And what's going on in me right now? And am I getting back to that foundation whereby I communicate a message to my child, you're safe with me here. I'm for you, not against you. Mm. If you're my child and I act that way with you, do you feel like I'm for you or against you?
Against me.
Yeah. So what do I need to do as a parent with these kids to be calm, to settle down? This isn't my conflict, it's theirs. How do I lead? And we have a little picture that we draw. How do I lead the way off of Crazy Mountain? There's a stream here, and on the other side of the stream is Reconciliation Meadow, right? And we talk about it's our job as parents to climb down off of Crazy Mountain by stepping on the first stone across that stream, which is the stone of calming. How do I calm me? How do I model that for my kids in a way that they can start to learn to calm down as well? That's all foundational stuff, right? And then how do I help them understand themselves and the emotions that they've got? Where's empathy showing up in any of this? How do I empathize? How do I help them learn to empathize? That's the stone of understand each other. So we lead the way. I can't expect them to understand each other if I'm not understanding what's going on in me, if I'm not helping them understand what's going on in each other. And so the second stone, I have to model that and lead the way toward that. And of course, we engage parents in the workshop in all kinds of ways to make this their own information. And then the next stone
Is solve. So it goes calm, understand, solve.
Which is really a coaching kind of a thing, right?
And that's where the parent facilitates the kids coming to some sort of agreement that will help them each get a bit of what's important to each one of them.
Yeah.
And then solve after, you know, even if it's messy and it takes a while, the final step is really important, and that is celebrate. And that helps the kids to feel good about whatever they did that was a little better than last time. Mm-hmm. And that celebrate step or rock or whatever across the stream is really what strengthens the whole process, because then kids are eager to get back and do it again. Mm-hmm. And we had a little six-year-old say her brother whacked her and her dad was in the big, you know, that's not okay, son, go to timeout. And she goes to her dad and says, Daddy, don't put Austin in timeout. Let us do the peace process.
Yeah.
The kids want to learn to do this. They feel so grown up and good about themselves, especially if we celebrate well at the end of it.
Yeah, we've actually made an online course out of this peace process and the sibling relationship.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
course. And we run into parents that we've never met, and they say, my kids are asking me to do the peace process. I'm like, we can't believe this. It's amazing.
So where can they find that?
So our website is connectedfamilies.org. Uh-huh. And, you know, we have a bunch of resources. The books are among them, but we provide parent coaching virtually all around the country. We've got online courses, a small but growing menu of courses where people can do this individually or as small groups. And then, of course, we want to partner with churches to build strong families and do workshops in the context of youth leaders, children's ministry leaders, senior pastor leaders. Their vision for equipping parents, if it includes helping bring God's grace and truth into the messes of everyday life kind of stuff, then we would love to be a part of helping to do that, because that's what we've done for the last 20 plus years.
That's amazing. Okay, I need to ask you about this. You are teaching about, I want to get this right. Oh, there you go. You're doing another seminar that hits home for me. It's called Understanding Your Sensitive or Intense Child. I'd like some highlights from that, please.
Well, this is Lynn's sweet spot.
Do not charge me for this.
Lynn, so go real here. But Lynn is an occupational therapist by training and worked in clinic for a long time with kids with sensory and behavioral needs. And so I'm just going to drink coffee and listen to this wise woman spew her nuggets.
Well, this is really about kids' nervous system. Each person's nervous system perceives their body and the environment differently from the next person. And we don't really realize that, the fullness of that. So parents often look at this child and think, you're just like irrational. I don't relate to how you're behaving at all right now. But we don't realize that that child may well be experiencing sensations in their body or what's coming at them, you know, sight and sound kind of things, as overwhelming, much more intense, aversive. They can't adjust the level or intensity of the sensation. It might not match well with other sensations that are coming in. And the world becomes an unsafe, overwhelming, confusing place. Now, that's
and
a lot.
And then they act out.
And that's a lot of stress. And they act out of that stress just like we would if we were experiencing those kinds of things. It's almost like listening to a radio station. The volume is stuck on high, and it's in between stations, and you get this static and crackle. So it's aversive, it's unpleasant, it's too intense, and you can't really adjust it. So
and then I get loud in order to control my environment, and then I get punished for it.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's sort of the way they cope is the best defense is a good offense. So if I'm really sensitive to touch, I'm afraid you're going to touch me, I'm going to come up and whack you first, because then you're going to back away.
Yeah.
I feel in control. But I'm just doing coping mechanisms. So when parents can understand how much their kids are actually kind of suffering in this intensity and this sensitivity, it brings compassion, and it also helps parents learn strategies of how to help the child be protected from some of the things that are most aversive to them, and then also introduce calming, pleasant sensations right when they need it. So if dinner time is a crazy time, you know, about an hour before that, you can help the child get some big motor activity, you know, lots of big muscle action, which is calming. You can give them a little back rub, and then you can give them something pleasant to focus on while you're fixing dinner. You know, so you think proactively about how to help them.
Our kids, we affectionately say that our kids had straight A's before school started, which meant they had allergies, ADD, ADHD, and acid reflux.
I love that.
And all evidence of a wired nervous system. Yep. And I didn't know about this stuff as our kids were growing up, but Lynn had our house equipped with barrels to roll around in and blankets
and
swings in the basement for kids to swing around in and all
mini
kinds
tramp,
of sensory. Kids, before dinner, you need to go down and jump on the mini tramp for a while, because we knew if that didn't.
Just go have some fun, be creative downstairs.
So, that was our early learning.
Yeah.
Well, we need to end this because we need to make arrangements for you to come live at my house. I have a spare room.
Well, we do have a contract in our briefcase.
I'll pay for it.
We could do a little parenting, parent coaching. I'd give you a freebie session.
That's great. Hey, listen, the books we've mentioned today are How to Grow a Connected Family and Discipling That Connects. Disciplining That Connects with Your Child's Heart.
Yeah.
And the website, if you want to grab these, is connectedfamilies.org. This is Jim and Lynn Jackson. Thank you guys so much for being with us.
Hey, great to be here.
Yeah, great. Yeah. Thanks.
We're having fun.